Do you feel like no matter what you do, your plants aren't thriving exactly the way you had hoped this year? I see you, plant friend, and I've got you. At this point, I've spoken to thousands of our plant friends, and I have noticed three key mistakes that beginner plant parents tend to make that can cause heartbreak over losing a plant that you love, confusion around what to do when there's so much conflicting advice on the internet, and the fact that plant care isn't intuitive anymore, and abandonment of their plant passion. And a lot of times you don't even realize you're doing it. You don't even realize you're making the mistake. And that's the most heartbreaking part. And I don't want you heartbroken, plant friend. I want you happy and thriving and growing joy alongside your luscious houseplants. That's why I'm hosting a free live online class called The Three Biggest Mistakes Holding You Back from Thriving Houseplants and How to Fix Them. And I want you there. In just an hour, I'm going to show you the top three mistakes I see the plant parents in our community making and how to not just avoid them, but how to confidently care for your plants with ease. So spots are limited, and frankly, they're selling out really quickly. They're totally free. So grab yours at growingjoywithmaria.com/class. That's growingjoywithmaria.com/class. We currently have 4 time slots available. I can't wait to see you there. This year, we've really seen it all. Record-breaking heat waves, devastating droughts, wildfires scorching millions of acres, and floods turning streets into rivers. As climate extremes test our resilience, our gardens are going to be feeling that impact too. The way we water, the way we plant and design our outdoor spaces has never been more critical. And today, we're tackling a question every gardener should be asking themselves. How do we future-proof our gardens to thrive in these unpredictable conditions? So stick around, we're going to dive into water-saving techniques and strategies to keep your garden lush and sustainable, no matter what Mother Nature throws our way. Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Plant care is self-care on Growing Joy.
Hello, plant friends. If you're new here, I'm Maria. I'm here to help you care for plants and grow joy. And if you're a returning listener, welcome home. I'm so honored to be here with you. To those of you who purchased the Growing Joy with Plants Masterclass, thank you so much. I'm so honored. And I'm so excited that you have this resource that I really have poured my heart and soul into. It's been a wonderful launch. And I thank you. Let me know if you have feedback, as you guys are some of the first people to have ever taken the course. Today, we are going to be diving into a topic that's more important than ever, how to save water while keeping our gardens thriving and beautiful, no matter what climate you're in. And there's no better expert to talk about this than Noelle Johnston. She's known as the Arizona Plant Lady. She's a horticulturist, a landscape consultant, and author of the new book, The Water Smart Garden, Techniques and Strategies for Water Efficient Gardening. If she's doing water efficient gardening in Arizona, she's got a lot to say. So in our conversation today, Noelle shares so many tips that you can apply to your garden, no matter where you live, to have it be a little bit more sustainable, a little bit more water smart. So we talk about so much. I'm so excited to dive in. So let's get right to it. Here's Noelle. Noelle, welcome to Growing Joy.
Thank you. I am thrilled to be here today.
I'm thrilled to have you on a conversation topic that I think a lot of people are talking about these days, water, water conservation, water saving. You know, we've had multiple conversations about climate resilience and how your gardens are affected. But before we dive into all of the amazing ways you're going to educate us on trying to conserve and efficiently use water in our gardens, how'd you become the plant lady you are today?
Well, I moved to Arizona from California. And I was very excited to, we bought our first house. We were excited to plant a garden. I bought plants and 6 months later, everything was dead. Even the beautiful rose bushes that my garden had come with, I had managed to kill them while keeping them alive. And it was very frustrating to garden in a challenging place where the rules were all different from other parts of the country. So it started me on a mission to figure out what to do and how to do it. And I went back to school and I got my degree in botany with a concentration in urban horticulture. And ever since then, my goal has always been to help people learn how to garden in challenging climates and take away the mystery. Take away all these extra rules people put on you that complicate things. It's much simpler than you think, but it's providing concrete guidelines to help them with that. And I come from Southern California, which is no stranger to droughts now and then. I moved to the desert where we do have drought now and then, but also, surprisingly, I've also come to learn how much drought is prevalent different times of year in other parts of the country.
Yeah. And why do you think it's becoming more and more of a conversation topic?
Well, first of all, it's getting hotter. And it doesn't matter where you live. You know, the northern parts of the country are having warmer winters. There are droughts in the middle of summer. I spent a while last year in the Midwest, and they were in the middle of a 3-year drought. And people are wondering, they don't want to be out there in the middle of a hot afternoon day watering their gardens. What happened to rain being enough? Well, you know what? Rain's not falling as often either. Rain levels are decreasing in many areas. So those are the conversations. People see plants that are wilting that used to be okay without them doing much to it. But with the climate getting warmer and changing, people are becoming concerned and they are wondering, what can I do to have a beautiful garden that's not wasting water, but also one that I don't have to spend all my time providing supplemental water to?
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned how the roses that even existed at your house died. It's like the garden that our grandma used to have, even if we've lived in the same place for our lives, all of a sudden they're plants that we can no longer grow that our grandparents used to grow very easily.
Yeah, and it is. And so we are having to evolve. We are having to create more environmentally resilient outdoor spaces, those that can handle the extremes that nature brings our way. And heat, decreasing rainfall amounts, we have shrinking water supplies. And you know what? When we have to provide supplemental water to so many of our plants, a lot of that water is coming from groundwater, from aquifers, from groundwater supply. And all over the country, we're pulling out more water than we are putting back. And it's not sustainable long term. And so when we talk about, well, we need to conserve water in the garden, well, that is not an exciting topic because then you think, well, then I have to sacrifice beauty. But nothing could be farther from the truth. You can have a really beautiful outdoor space that conserves water that you can be proud of.
And I love how it kind of goes along and in tandem with this sustainability movement that's happening too. People wanting to plant natives, people wanting to get rid of their lawns, you know, and turning your lawns into meadows. Like all of these trends that we're seeing are driven from that as well. And it really does marry well together. So when it comes to water conservation, what does that even look like? I'm a renter, so I've never really dealt with in-ground gardening yet. I'm a container gardener. What are, as a homeowner, the different ways that you can conserve water? And as a renter, can you even conserve water?
Oh, that's such a good question. Well, you can. So first of all, we want to understand what percentage of water, your household water use, goes to the outdoors. Now, the average is 30 to 70% of your household water use goes to watering your plants outside.
Wow. For an average person or for like a gardener?
No, like an average person, 30% in an area that gets a lot of rainfall. If the more you go, though, towards the western side of the United States, drier areas, you're talking up to 70%. That's a lot. So that's a great way you can start with saving water. But the first thing we want to do, there's a lot of different things we can work on, though. But we want to figure out what is the incidence of drought where you live. Are you in a drought? Are you not? And you can look that up. There's this wonderful website called droughtmonitor.gov. And you could go on there at any time and it's going to show you like this map with lots of colors on it. The darker the color, the more drought there is. And it's important to know when your area is struggling with drought. Second, we want to take a look at the plants in your landscape that you tend to have to water extra. Which ones are you constantly having to apply water to? Which ones struggle? Which ones tend to wilt when they get a little bit dry? Maybe those aren't the best plants for you to have. Instead, we can look at plants that are either native to your region, which means they are more adapted to the climate and the normal amounts of rainfall. You can also look at plants that come from regions that are similar to yours, that have similar temperature ranges and similar amounts of rainfall. Typically, those can do just as well in your garden too. So you don't have to be restrained to just natives. Natives are wonderful, but you can go beyond that if you want to. As a renter, one really neat way you can save water is renters tend to really be into container gardening. And if you are planting flowering annuals, those take a lot of water and it's a lot of work because you're out there hand watering them in most cases if you're renting. And you can have an equally as beautiful plant inside of your favorite pot by putting in a flowering shrub instead. You still get the beautiful flowers. They don't need hardly as much water. They don't need to be watered as frequently as your flowering annuals do. You don't have to yank them out. If you're in a warmer climate, winter, you can keep that same shrub in your pot all year. And I have been growing flowering shrubs in containers for over 8 years, the same shrubs, and they are so beautiful.
What do you grow in your, and what is your zone in Arizona?
Okay, so the zone where I live is zone 9. And so I live in central Arizona. We get hot, but we're dry.
Mm-hmm. I'm zone 10B in Florida, so yeah. I'm hot and humid.
Yeah. And there's a lot of crossover actually in the kinds of plants that we grow, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. But I have a lovely plant called Mexican honeysuckle, Justicia spicigera, which is native to Mexico. It has beautiful light green leaves and orange flowers off and on through the year. Hummingbirds love it. It does beautifully in my pots. And they get watered in the desert in the middle of summer. They get watered about once every 5 days, which is kind of amazing for where I live. So another way you can save water is to plant succulents. Succulents are just a nationwide craze. I go to these cold climate. I do a lot of garden travel. I go to these cold climate regions and I see them growing the same succulents that I grow outside all year in my garden. And they've got them in pots and they haul them down to the basement, you know, in the winter time to overwinter them. But succulents are beautiful. I like to think of them as uniquely shaped outdoor sculpture with their weird shapes. And they store water inside their leaves, which means you could go a lot longer in between watering. They're the perfect low maintenance plant that you can add to containers. And what I like to do for splashes of colors, I like to use colorful containers. Blue is my favorite color for a container. You could have beautiful succulents in varying shades of green or blue and gray or orange. And then you have them in this big, beautiful blue container. It can be absolutely stunning. And those need even less water. For succulents, you want to water the entire pot. You want to get the entire root ball, the whole, all the dirt, you want it wet. And then you need to let it dry out for several days before you're going to even touch it again. A lot of people kill succulents because they tend to take care of them.
Oh, I know it. As a houseplant parent, I've killed my fair share of succulents from overwatering.
Yeah, they thrive on neglect. So a lot less watering than you would think. So those are really great options for renters and other people too.
Yeah. So you've like high level kind of talked about different ways that you know, we can conserve water on a high level, I want to kind of dig deeper. You mentioned plants. You mentioned like choosing different plants. You mentioned tools. When it comes to plants, what do we need to know? How do we select drought tolerant plants? How do we know what plants work for our climate? Because obviously succulents aren't going to work year round in New York, where I used to live. So how do you go about selecting drought tolerant plants and plants that will conserve water?
So first, we want to look at certain characteristics that a drought tolerant plant is going to have. So understand that plants are made up of approximately 95% water. That's a lot.
Just like us. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And during the day, when the sun comes out, plants lose water through the surface of their leaves. So this sucks it out, whether the plant wants it to or not. And so strategies that drought-tolerant plants have to hold on to as much water as they can, one of those strategies is having smaller leaves. So there's less surface area for water to be lost through. Drought-tolerant plants may also have a grayish cast to them. So you may see like a grayish green or a grayish blue. That is a good indicator that it has, usually they're tiny, tiny little microscopic hairs covering the surface of the leaf that give it that color. And that helps to reflect the sun's rays. And it helps
like
the
sunscreen.
It is. It's like sunscreen. Especially, if, you know, when you put that really white, pasty sunscreen on yourself. Mm-hmm. It's like that for plants. And it works really well. So those are some things that drought-tolerant plants tend to have.
If you're gardening outdoors, you should be doing it with Espoma Organics, my favorite partner, my favorite 90-year-old family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. As we talk about, you know, water conservation, we all know that planting with good soil and good compost is important. And Espoma has everything you need for your garden. High quality organic options that are happy and healthy for your indoor and outdoor plant collections. Start their seeds in their amazing seed starter mix. Plant them up in your garden with their Biotone Starter Plus plant food that helps your plants grow larger root masses and establish faster and reduces transplant loss. You can plant them up in their large array of garden soils. You can use their composts and potting mixes for whatever container bed or in-ground gardening situation you have. And then you can continue to feed your plants with their lines of fertilizers that they have called tones. So there's a garden tone, a flower tone, a bulb tone, whatever you're growing, they have a specific fertilizer for it. And of course, if you're a houseplant parent like me, you can keep it simple with their potting mix and their liquid indoor houseplant food. To top it all off, Espoma Organic has a huge sustainability commitment with 100% solar-powered plant, zero-waste manufacturing, and eco-friendly packaging. To learn more about their indoor and outdoor products, visit Espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or you can click the link in the show notes to go to my Amazon storefront of curated Espoma picks. If you've been interested in learning how to plan, plant, and tend to low-maintenance perennial plantings, I definitely have your next read. It's the AHS Essential Guide to Perennial Gardening. It's the second book in the American Horticultural Society's series of growing guides, and it's a comprehensive and modern guide to cultivating and caring for perennial plants, including many perennials that are native to North America. Whether you grow in full sun or in a shady corner, in a small space or a large landscape, the insight and guidance offered by the experts at AHS ensure that you will have a thriving, bloom-filled garden. My mom's a perennial gardener. She always has the most gorgeous blooms in her garden. It's got garden design strategies, advice on picking plants, and over 150 plant profiles with photos and care advice. So the AHS Essential Guide to Perennial Gardening has the science-based information you need to overcome today's gardening challenges. Pick it up at your favorite local bookstore, bookshop.org, Barnes & Noble, or Amazon. That's the AHS Essential Guide to Perennial Gardening.
But an easier way also, instead of just going to the nursery and looking at all the plants, is if you go to a local botanical garden. And most of them have a low water section or a drought tolerant garden section. Walk through there. Look at the plants they have. See which ones speak to you. See which ones that you think are attractive and nice. Bonus with botanical gardens, many of those plants are going to have signage to tell you the name of the plant. Hmm. If they don't, take a picture of it. You could take it to a volunteer at the garden who could identify it for you, or take it to your closest nursery who can tell you what that plant is and how well it does. So botanical gardens are really good resources for that type of information.
I love that. I love that. And also, I always encourage people to go to their local garden center with the ladies. When I first moved, I've moved all over the country, but when I moved to New York, I remember the first thing I did was go to the local garden center, find the lady who looked like she was running stuff and go up to her, introduce myself. She, you know, she's lived in the area forever. You know, she's an expert gardener or whoever they are. And I have not done that yet since I moved to Florida, but I'm very excited to, because I do feel like leaning on those locals for your hyper-regional suggestions is so important.
It is. And I was going to mention that you want to go to a local nursery, one that's locally owned, ideally. Because if you go to a big box store, you're going to see a lot of really beautiful plants there. But a large number of those plants really aren't suitable for the climate. And it doesn't matter where you live. I've gone to big box stores all over the country, and there are certain types of plants they put out there as eye candy, and they're in the front, and they want to tempt you to buy them. And some of them just are not suitable whatsoever for that particular climate. And so the shopper buys this plant, they plant it, and 6-8 weeks later, the plant is barely hanging on for life, and they think it's their fault, when a lot of cases, it's not. So a local nursery, one that is locally owned, is going to be a better source of information, where you will have, a helpful nursery professional there who can really help you zero in on the types of plants if you want to create a water-resilient landscape. That's going to be what you need.
Yeah, I love that. So we talked about plants. What about soil, right? Because you also hear about amending your soil, making sure that your soil can absorb water. How do you make your soil more efficient at water retention?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Soil is our biggest bank, meaning it's the best place to store moisture. Plants, though, can get too much water or too little, or it dries up. The soil dries up very quickly. And so what's really important with our soils is having the right type of texture. If you have a sandier soil, water's going to drain through really quickly. If you have a more clay-like soil, water is going to sit in that soil for quite a while. It doesn't permeate quickly. It doesn't permeate as deeply as sandy soil does. So it can stay moist for longer. Sometimes it can stay a little too wet for too long, which is not good for plants. So with plants, it's helpful to think of the fact that in the ground, there's all the soil particles, and there's these little tiny spaces in between the individual soil particles. And that's where oxygen resides. And plants need oxygen, and they get it from the soil. And when we water, water floods those little spaces where the oxygen was temporarily, and the plant takes up the water. But if your soil's too sandy, the water doesn't stay around for very long. If your soil is too clay-like and it doesn't drain very well, the water stays around way too long, and it maybe doesn't go too deeply where those plant roots are. So the absolute best way to improve the texture and water-holding capabilities of your soil is compost, which is so easy. And so if you want to do a test to see how well-drained your soil is, because most drought-tolerant plants are lower water use. They don't like a lot of wet soil. And so that's kind of, if you have a very wet soil, you're going to have a hard time with those kinds of plants. So to test your drainage, what you're going to do is dig a hole 1 foot deep, 1 foot wide, fill it with water and let it drain. And then you're going to fill it up again. And if the water drains within about 3 hours, you've got a sandier soil. If it takes 12 hours or so, you probably have more clay soil, which time either one, it's going to be good to amend the soil with compost. So in a given plant hole, you would add 1/3 compost and mix it up with 2/3 existing soil, which should provide kind of the ideal mixture, because the compost, it adds to the water absorbing qualities of sandy soil. So it allows it to hold on, keep the water there a little bit longer. And for clay soil, it's going to allow the water to drain and permeate more effectively. So it's just compost.
Love it. What about ground cover? Because I've heard that making sure, like, I just did an interview with my friend Janie from Dig Plant Water Repeat, and she was telling me that now that I'm a Floridian gardener, I need to look into mulch because mulch regulates temperature, but also mulch is going to help, especially with those farther north than me, retain moisture. So what about adding compost into the soil, but then on top as well?
Yes, you would absolutely do that. So before you plant an area, you can add, you know, 4 inches of compost and work it into the soil before you plant. Ground covers, though, are really important. And when we are looking at the increasing heat that many regions are having, ground covers are a really great way to get to help lessen that. Because when the sun hits the ground, it heats up and the ground can re-radiate heat. But if you have ground covers, it's like grass. It absorbs the heat. It stays nice and cool there. With ground covers, we want to plant them in groupings so they actually can touch each other. Plants don't have cooties. They can touch each other a little bit. You don't want them like running all the way into each other, but they can lightly overlap. And it's actually more impactful from a design perspective when you add several groupings of ground cover. Mulch is super important for creating a water-wise garden. Ground covers can act as a mulch, and mulches help protect the soil and the roots of the plants underneath. In the winter, they will keep the soil from getting super cold. They'll keep it a little warmer. In the summer, it'll help keep it cooler. And it also helps limit the soil from drying out very quickly. So if you have just bare exposed dirt, it's going to dry up really fast. So having mulch is really important. Now, there's two different types. There are organic mulches, which are like your shredded bark or your straw or old leaves. And the other kind is inorganic, which is landscape rock. And organic mulches improve the soil because they break down over time and you have to reapply them every year or so. And they're lovely. Inorganic mulches are more popular in dry climate regions, although they are present all over the country. And inorganic mulches protect the soil underneath from drying out too quickly. That helps moderate soil temperatures. Both types help with the weeds. But inorganic mulches don't improve the soil over time. The bonus is they don't have to be replaced, you know, as often as the organic mulches.
They look chic too. I mean, I feel like whenever I see a rock garden with cacti and, you know, all, that's such a vibe, particularly cool. In Arizona. Yeah, particularly where you live. Cool. What about tools? Like, what's an ala?
Okay. So ala, O-L-L-A. It's actually pronounced olla. So it's a Spanish name.
Oh, is it? Okay. Olla.
Yeah. Olla.
Okay.
And ollas are so cool. This is an example of an ancient practice that still works. And they're becoming very, very trendy nowadays for a good reason. So ollas are basically clay vessels like terracotta. Mm-hmm. And they're clay vessels that you bury in the ground. And there's an opening at the top and you fill it with water. And then there's a little, you put a little top over it. And what it does is it will slowly leach out water into the soil to the surrounding plants. And farmers have been doing that for centuries. And it's been very effective because you're watering from under the ground and not over the ground. There's less water lost to evaporation rather than adding watering something with a hose and you have all that water on the surface that evaporates before it gets to the plant. Ollas are also super cool to use for raised bed vegetable gardening and in your container plants, your container gardens.
Really?
Yes.
Because I'm about to do, but I work with Crescent Gardens, so I have their True Drop self-watering planters. My sister has raised cedar beds. So I could get an olla or make, I've seen so many TikToks on like making your own olla with two upside down, you know, one normal terracotta pot, another upside down one, and you seal it with, you know, DIY cement. But I could put an olla in her raised bed as a way to, it's almost like turning a raised bed into a self-watering planter.
that's basically it. So with the other ones, like you're saying, Crescent Gardens is a great company. You know, it comes from below and then the water is wicked up. But with the Oyas, it comes from the sides. So you can buy Oyas and they can get pricey. But yes, you can make your own. So I have a DIY in the book, how to make your own. And it is. It's two terracotta pots. It's the simplest thing to use.
$149, right? At the garden center. It's $3. Yeah.
It is. And it's very simple to do. And then you bury the Oya in your container. And then you add your plants around it. And then you just bring the hose out every several days, fill that Oya up. Now, the Oya, you'll have to fill it more often in the summer. You know, when it's hotter, plants are going to evaporate more water from their leaves in the fall and the spring. You know, you will have to water it less often, but you need to check. And you got to keep that lid on it because you don't want mosquitoes getting in there.
And is there a ratio, say I have an 8-inch or say I have a 12-inch container? Is there like a ratio for how large the Oya should be compared to the container?
Not necessarily. I mean, you're just going to look visually. You're going to use a smaller Oya for that, but you want room for the plants to be able to grow their roots. And what's interesting is if you could see a cross section of the Oya with the plants around it, all those roots are just growing on the surface of the Oya. And the larger Oyas are good for bigger pots. You want to keep your plants, you know, within a foot. If you're in a small pot, you want those plants to be within 8 inches of the Oya. Medium-sized pots, you know, at least a foot, generally speaking. In a vegetable garden or a raised bed, the water can flow out a little further. You're going to want bigger Oyas for that and enough for the water to go out about 18 to 24 inches from the Oya. Now, Oyas are not suitable for seedlings right away. So if, you know, your sister has a vegetable garden and she's planted seedlings, the Oya's water's coming from underneath and the seeds are way up above. So she'll have to do...
You got to let the roots grow down.
You got to let them grow down.
Okay. So this month, I launched the Plant Parent Personality Test activation in garden centers, while simultaneously putting the final touches on my new course that's coming out next month called Growing Joy with Plants Masterclass. It has been an insanely exciting month. I'm so excited. It's also been overwhelmingly busy with platform buildouts, in-store activations, and so much tech behind the scenes. It's been busy, but in a good way. And in the midst of all of this exciting stuff coming to life for the brand and for our community, I'm so thankful that my fridge has been stocked with Magic Mind's mental performance shots. I usually take one after lunch. Most days, it's this little bottle. It's like a set of little bottles that sit in your fridge. It's this green liquid that tastes really delicious. And I find that it really helps me get through the second half of the workday with more focus. I love that it has this time-released caffeine in it that gives me a really nice even boost throughout the second half of the workday. And it also has herbs in it that provide safe and effective stress relief. I really feel like I've been the calmest and the busiest that I've ever been. Shout out to Magic Mind. So if you are curious about trying it for yourself, they have a no-risk option for you with 100% refund, no questions asked for 100 days after buying, and they ship internationally, plant friends. So try it for yourself if you're curious. Put an extra pep in your step, and you can get 45% off the Magic Mind bundle with my link. It's magicmind.com/growingjoyjan, like January the month. So to get 45% off, it's magicmind.com/growingjoyjan. This episode of Growing Joy with Plants is brought to you by Manucora Honey, also known as Honey with Superpowers, also known as my new hyperfixation, if you've been listening to this podcast for the last couple of months. I use it almost every morning to make my coffee so delicious. Manucora Honey is single origin, rich, creamy. It's so delicious. It almost tastes like caramel. And it's collected by bees that only feed off of nectar from the Manuka tea tree in New Zealand. That's what makes it so special, and that it has 3 times more antioxidants and prebiotics in it than your average honey. Try it for yourself, Plant Friends, and you'll get $25 off their starter kit since you're a listener of the podcast. So all you have to do is go to manukora.com/bloom. Manukora is spelled manukora.com/bloom, and you'll get $25 off your starter kit, which comes with an MGO 850 plus Manuka honey jar, 5 honey travel sticks, which are great for like a long weekend, a wooden spoon, and a guidebook. That's manukora.com/bloom for $25 off your own starter kit. This episode of Growing Joy with Plants is brought to you by Manukora Honey, also known as Honey with Superpowers, also known as my new hyperfixation, if you've been listening to this podcast for the last couple of months. I use it almost every morning to make my coffee so delicious. Manukora Honey is single origin, rich, creamy. It's so delicious. It almost tastes like caramel. And it's collected by bees that only feed off of nectar from the Manuka tea tree in New Zealand. That's what makes it so special, and that it has 3 times more antioxidants and prebiotics in it than your average honey. Try it for yourself, Plant Friends, and you'll get $25 off their starter kit since you're a listener of the podcast. So all you have to do is go to manukora.com/bloom. Manukora is spelled manukora.com/bloom, and you'll get $25 off your starter kit, which comes with an MGO 850 plus Manuka honey jar, 5 honey travel sticks, which are great for like a long weekend, a wooden spoon, and a guidebook. That's manukora.com/bloom for $25 off your own starter kit. What about barrels? Everybody talks about capturing your rainwater, right? So we're grabbing it in our gardens, but what about making it more cyclical, capturing the rainwater, using it, you know, it's the purest, best water for our gardens. It's not treated. So what are different ways for capturing rainwater?
So there are different ways you can do it. I know most parts of the country have rain gutters. Mm-hmm. In the Southwest, we don't have that many. Yeah. It's rare, but most people have rain gutters. So a rain barrel is an easy way. It's called active water harvesting, where you're actually capturing the water inside of a vessel. Okay. And a rain barrel is a great way to do that, where it is next to your house and water from the gutters is channeled into that and it stores water. There's also an overflow towards the top of the rain barrel where the rain barrel gets full, then it's going to, that overflow will spill out the excess water. And what you can do is you can create a little channel or what we call a swale. It's just a little U-shaped channel, and you could channel that into your garden or to an area where you want to get water. So the overflow you can use, you could just channel it away from the house into other parts of your garden. And so that's a good way to get started. If a rain barrel right now isn't in your budget or on the horizon, you know, don't grab a bucket. If you've got rain coming down and you want to catch some of that water, that's handy. If you have a situation where you don't have gutters and water just comes off the sides of your roof, you can add plants in those areas, and those plants help absorb the water before it runs off. Now, most properties are slightly graded. They're slightly sloped so that water will run to the street and the gutters and be taken away. So when rain hits the street, it picks up all the pollutants in the street. And then it takes it down into our watersheds and things like that. So not such a great thing. But when we could keep that free water on our property for longer and actually use it, that's a big deal. And so in addition to active water harvesting, which are the rain barrels, you could also do above ground water tanks, which are bigger. You could do underground cisterns where you could have water channeled from the roof into big, huge tanks under the ground. But passive water harvesting is when we sculpt or we contour our landscape with earth, with soil, and so that we direct the rain to specific areas of the landscape. And again, this is an ancient practice. It's been done forever, and it's very effective. So if you have an area, note when it rains where water tends to flow. And that's a great starting area for you to create a channel. And then you can create what we would call a swale, which is a shallow depression where water can collect.
Is it a depression like made out of concrete or is it a depression just with your earth?
Just with earth. And then you add plants. You add plants in that depression. In other words, it's a rain garden. So you can do that. You could have your rain barrel. You could have a swale with the excess. It can end out up in a rain garden. You could have a swale with no plants in it. And what happens is that allows, as long as you well-drained soil, that water is going to drain out within 24 hours. It's going to eventually make its way down to your groundwater. And those are all benefits. Another thing that's super popular are those dry creek beds that you can see. There's those little rock creek beds that run through the landscape. And a lot of times they're just decorative, but they can actually be incredibly functional. And it can route the water from where it falls in the house, from a gutter or wherever, a downspout. And those dry creek beds curve through the landscape. And any curve you make, like a channel, is going to slow down the water. So it takes longer for it to get to the street. And that allows the water on its journey to sink down into the soil. And that's going to help the surrounding plants. And also, it's super cool. All the cool things.
So if I wanted to do that on my property, how would you recommend me doing that? Are there resources that teach you? Is that in your book?
Yes, I have those resources in the book about how to create swales, approximate sizes. There's pictures. Okay. There's pictures, real life pictures, and then there's illustrations on how to do that. So we have a project of creating a rain garden. We've got lots of neat swales. And you know what really was fascinating to me was they're pretty common here in the Southwest and parts of California that get dry. But I was in Minnesota last summer and I was so surprised at how many passive water harvesting, so much put into practice and beautiful. I took pictures. They're in the book. The homeowners were very gracious and allowed me to use those. But just some really stunning ways to incorporate water harvesting. And you would never know. You would never know that that was the intention. They're just so beautifully designed.
Wow. That's amazing. What about xeriscaping? I saw that name in your book. I'd never heard of it before. What is a xeriscape?
Okay. It is a Greek word. So xera means dry. Scape is landscape. So dry landscape. And this phrase was coined in Denver, Colorado, a long time ago. And xeriscaping is a way to create a beautiful outdoor space that puts in several water-saving strategies. And some people mispronounce it and they call it xeriscape. And it's not zero because there's plants in there. And the plants are really important to that. And they just make it so pretty and beautiful. So xeriscapes are just my favorite thing. First of all, we look at the topography of a landscape. Basically, what are the high areas? What are the low areas? We want to look for areas where we're going to group plants together that have similar watering needs. So if you have some plants that need a lot of water, put them together so they can all share of that water. If you have plants that are more drought tolerant, put them in their own section. You also want to match plants according to their sun requirements as well. We want to choose low water plants, which could be native or other adapted type plants that are going to do well in your zone planting. So, but USDA planting zones only cover minimum cold temperatures. They do not cover how hot it may get where you live. And so you also need to keep in mind how hot can your plants stand it? And that's where botanical garden or a good local nursery is really going to come alongside and help you with that. We want to choose the lower water plants. We want to improve our soils. So if needed, you're going to improve the water capacity of a sandy soil. If your soil is very clay-like and does not drain well, you're going to improve that as well with compost for both cases. And then xeriscape also uses very effective irrigation practices. So Many landscapes, especially in the drier regions of the country, require supplemental water most of the time. And so we need to make sure that we're using the most efficient irrigation methods, which usually is drip irrigation for your trees, your shrubs, your ground covers, things like that. We also want to water early in the morning because water, the sun's not as strong, and water is what drives water loss. It's what drives water evaporating. So when you water early in the morning, sun's not very strong yet, and so the plants can take up that water. We also want to make sure that we adjust watering frequencies, how often you water. We want to adjust those seasonally. Plants don't need as much water in the spring and fall as they do in the summer. You may not need to supplementally water your plants at all in the winter necessarily, but some people make the mistake of they've got their summer watering schedule and that's just what they do all year long, which really wastes it. A xeriscape's also going to have mulch, whether it's organic mulch or inorganic mulch, because that prevents the soil from drying out quickly. Xeriscape also is reducing or eliminating grass areas.
I was going to ask about this. I'm the daughter of a golf family, and I'm what I like to call a golf widow. My husband has recently gotten into golf, and I never see him on the weekends anymore. And it's so much lawn. I'm like, oh my God, how much water? So that seems to be a huge trend, is people, you know, turning their lawns into meadows. How can you reduce the water of your lawn? Is xeriscaping just getting rid of lawns, or is it just approaching lawns differently?
It's reducing or eliminating. So let's talk about lawns, because that is our biggest water use outdoors in the country, is the lawn. And there are people out there who are anti-lawn, like in no way, shape, or form should you ever have a lawn. And if you have a lawn, make sure it's a functional lawn, meaning that you are using it, especially if you are in a drier part of the country. So a lot of people have what we call non-functional front lawns. Kids don't play on it. It's just there for decoration, using up a lot of water, and it takes a lot of mowing and things like that. And in its place, you could put in beautiful lush green ground covers, lots of beautiful flowering plants that take a fraction of the water and maintenance that a lawn does. In some places, particularly in the western half of the United States, some places are requiring that you get rid of your lawn, or irrigation regulations have been passed down where restrictions where you can't even water your lawn enough to keep it green. So a lot of places in California have had to deal with that, and Las Vegas, for example. So if you can remove your lawn, I have a whole chapter on removing your lawn in the book about how to do it. And there are really efficient ways to do it, and we provide lots of before and after photo inspiration. But let's say that you can't get rid of your lawn for some reason or another. Maybe the neighborhood where you live, your homeowners association, requires that you have a lawn. There's places where that is true. Or your partner cannot bear to part with the lawn. You're stuck with it. Or your kids are playing with it on it all the time. There's some things we could do to minimize the usage of water on our lawns. And one is to allow it to grow taller. Let your lawn grow to about 3 inches tall, because that shades the roots of your lawn. So less water is lost, less water evaporates from the ground. Also, when you mow it, you don't want to mow more than a third of its height, because again, if you water it too short, it's going to lose more water. When you turn your sprinklers on, make sure that they're just watering your lawn and not your sidewalk or your driveway, and make those adjustments. Also, you want to allow your lawn, you want to water to a depth of 6 to 8 inches each time. Most people water their lawn too frequently and not deeply enough. So when you've watered your lawn, go ahead when you're done and take a long screwdriver out there and push it down. It should go down pretty easily to as far as the water went down. And then that'll tell you whether you have to have the water turned on for longer or not. When it comes to determining how often you should be watering your lawn, it's not every day. At the most, it may be twice a week or less. And so at different times of year, look at when your lawn starts to look a little wilty. Sometimes it'll turn a little bluish in color. And let's say that happens every 8 days. Well, then what you want to do is then water it every 6 days before it gets to that wilty point.
So you don't get to the blue part, but you're also not overwatering so that you're watering green lawn that doesn't even need water.
Yes. Okay. And that works really well. You can skip watering if you get a half inch or more of rain. You can skip it. One thing that makes lawn watering really easy is if you get a smart irrigation controller. So if you have...
I was just going to ask about this. Is there something that will do that for me so I don't have to be turning it on and off?
Yes. Because, you know, we don't have enough time in the day to be dealing with all that stuff. So, yes, there are smart irrigation controllers, which are plugged into real-time weather data from where you are. So it's going to measure the temperature. It will estimate how much water is evaporating, the wind, because if it's a windy day, things are drying out more. How much rain did you get? Can we skip a day? Can we skip a watering cycle? Or do we need to water more? So smart irrigation controllers, there's lots of different brands out there. And a lot of them you can control from your phone, which is very
cool. That's amazing. And that's a very simple thing, because I'm assuming that's something you buy and you're really just screwing it into your irrigation, right? It's probably like a receiver. So that's a very simple hack that you can do that doesn't even really affect, like you don't have to change your landscape. It's just putting that in. Interesting.
Usually it would be an irrigation professional. You would come out or your landscape professional come out and install that, and then it's done.
And then it's done. I love that. I love a simple fix. So I'd love to close out asking you, so like I'm a beginner. I've never done water irrigation. I'm intimidated. I don't have a lot of time. What's the thing that you would say, like, what's the biggest bang for your buck in terms of water conservation, not expense, but what's the best thing I could do to take a step towards conserving water if I'm a true newbie at this?
Oh, I'm excited. Okay. I'm going to tell you two things that are very simple. Okay. First one, allow your plants to grow to their natural size. Avoid pruning things too much. Okay. Every time you prune plants, that stimulates new growth. And the plants are going to need more water. So they use more water the more often they're pruned. So if you allow enough room for your plants to grow to their mature size, you can research, look online, you can find that out. Allow enough room for them to grow to their mature size. A bigger plant is going to shade more of the ground and prevent water from, it's like a living mulch. It's going to keep the water from evaporating from underneath it. So that's a really, really good thing. Another thing, an easy way that if you don't have a drip irrigation system or it's just not something you're going to do right away, you can get a soaker hose. And a soaker hose looks like a regular hose, but it's made up of a black permeable rubber. And you attach it to the end of your hose and you could wrap it around your plants or your trees that need some extra water. And it slowly weeps out water. And because it slowly weeps out water, it allows the water to permeate into the ground rather than a hose, which is actually wasteful because we don't know how much water's coming out of that hose. And then the water starts to run off before it even gets down to the roots. So let your plants grow big, invest in a soaker hose.
Love that. And then what about for someone who has done that and, you know, is pretty savvy, probably has like a rain barrel? What would be like the 2.0 or 3.0 next level things that someone could look into?
I'd say getting a drip irrigation system installed. They're the most water efficient method of applying water to your plants. And you can really, really customize the system. So you can have an irrigation line for your trees, which don't need to be watered very often. You can have a second line for your shrubs, ground covers, and vines all together because they usually share the same watering requirements. You can have a separate line if you have vegetable garden, let it water your vegetables for you. Fruit trees, you know, if you have citrus. I mean, you're in Florida, I'm in Arizona, we do citrus. And, you know, you can have a separate line for that because you have to water, all your plants are on a single irrigation line. By default, you have to water them as often as the thirstiest plant requires. And so if you can break it apart into different zones, that's going to save water and you're going to have healthier plants and those that aren't overwatered and are dying because of it. So those are going to be really helpful. And your local municipality should have watering guidelines specific to your region. So your water provider, your town's website. It could be you can look at your local nursery that's going to have those kind of guidelines for you. Because watering frequency is going to vary dramatically depending on the region you live in. And most people water more than they need to.
Got it. You are such a treasure trove of information. If anybody is interested in anything we talked about today, your book is like such a deep dive, right? You want a Xeriscape? You teach it how. You want to do a Oya? You know, you show how. So tell us about this book that's coming out December 3rd. I think this episode will be out by the time your book is out, and where people can find the book, but also where people can find and learn from you.
Oh, thank you. So the book is called The Water Smart Garden, and it comes out this winter, and I'm really excited about it. And it is not a book for dry climate regions. It is for anywhere. It's even for people who live in tropical regions. So it's going to enable you to use water efficiently in lots of ways and cultivate beauty at the same time. You can find out all sorts of things about me on my website, and that's azplantlady.com.
And like the Arizona plant lady, AZ plant yep, lady.
That's it. And then I Great. Am on Instagram at az.plant.lady and Facebook at azplantlady. And I'm always posting lots of helpful garden information to make people's lives easier and helping them cultivate beauty.
I love that. And particularly the Arizona gardeners. What are you doing if you're not following Noelle already, the AZ plant lady? So thank you so much, Noelle. This was amazing.
Thank you, Maria. I loved it.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Noelle. She's so smart. Her book is so wonderful. It's called The Water Smart Garden, Techniques and Strategies for Water Efficient Gardening. You should go pick it up. You can really apply, even though she's in Arizona, like you can really apply so many of her solutions to really wherever you live, right? I'm in Florida. I used to live in New York. I can apply so many of the things we discussed to either of my gardening zones, even though they're so different. I wish you a safe and healthy and happy gardening season this year, plant friends, as we are coming into so many different climate adversities that we're feeling. I hope you and your home and your plants and your hearts are all protected and that this episode, as always, helps you keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, That drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.